The Locals Only Podcast with Gavin Glass, bringing you the best new Irish talent every week from Radio Nova and Nova.ie.
It gives me incredible pleasure and great excitement to introduce to you Stano, the legendary Stano. How you doing, buddy?
Great, thank you.
It's great to have you here. It really is. You have a new album coming out in 2 weeks' time, In Between Silence, Where We Really Exist, but you also have had your debut album just recently released on Another City Records on October 15th, Content to Write in Idine Weathercraft. Yeah. What the hell does that mean?
I don't know myself
what,
even.
What did it mean to you back in 1983?
Just when I was messing around with lyrics and poems and bits and pieces and putting words together, really, the way I work with music, it's the same process. Mixing different words with different ways and sounds, different sounds, and in the studio, it's the same process.
Well, I really want to talk about that process, but first, I wanted the music to do a bit of talking. And I've spent the last 2 weeks just kind of having a look up your musical skirt, and I'm just like, you were a character on the scene that, you know, you'd always read about in Tony Clayton Lee's A to Z of Irish Rock and all these, books and history that I read on Irish music. And you were always there and always featured. And I'd never really delved in. But as a producer, I was just blown away at how ahead of the time it all was. So listeners, my beautiful dreamers, listen to this. This is 1983. What do you want to say about this? We're going to play Out of Darkness into the Dawn.
It was taken from my first album, Content, and it was recorded in the basement of Robert Emmett's house in Rathfarnham. Yeah.
Sorry. Really?
No, yeah.
So, wow.
And it was just a big room with a grand piano in the middle of it, and the natural reverb you hear on the piano is the reverb of the room. So, and our friend Roger Doyle, who I'd known, I was a fan of his music, and I met him and he came into the studio and had a drum machine. The first time we ever had an 808 drum machine was ever used in Ireland, so that was part of it.
Wow, where history is being made. All right, if you have headphones, folks, reach for them, and if you're at the volume, turn it up. This is Stano. Thank you. Beautiful. If you just joined us, it's Locals Only with your host Gavin Glass, and I'm joined by Stano here in Radio Nova Towers, and we are having a little retrospective look at this bit of a living legend, Stano, at your career. This was from the Dossier label. You did three records with them. That's right, yeah. Isn't it?
Well, that album was released on Scuff Records originally in Dublin. It was an Irish independent label, and then it was picked up by in a Berlin label called Dossier. That was in the mid-80s, so I done three albums for them, so that's where that came from.
And were they, I know you kind of sometimes shrug at the suggestion of your music being, you know, lumped into the experimental category. You know, was that label, I mean, because back then the studios were expensive and the studio is your instrument. You know, you more so than any other producer really at the time was, you know, using the studio like a guitar player uses his guitar. Like they must have been very supportive of that kind of music because, you know, it wasn't, you know, massive chart commercial stuff. I mean, what were they like as a label to work with?
It was great because when I put out, I was in a band called The Threat, first of all. Yeah. It was a punk band. And we put out our first single in 1980. We didn't really know what we were doing. And like within 3 days, it had sold 1,000 copies completely, you know. And just a bit of history behind that. And then John Peel was playing it off the air for weeks upon weeks. And then we started to record our second single, and Rough Trade then offered a deal for an album. And the guy, lead singer, he was a guy called Morris Foley, an English guy from London. About 3 weeks into recording the new single, I remember getting a knock at the door one Sunday morning, and he was there standing in all these Hare Krishna robes, and he decided he didn't want to have anything to do with music. So the band just died. So a few weeks later, I had put an advertising in Hot Press with a friend of mine, and the advertising was anybody into punk rock and Bob Dylan. So we got these guys phoned up, and that's how I met Vinnie Murphy and a few different people. So I was just sitting in his house. He's playing the piano. I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Just messing around." And I kept hearing these melodies. So the next day I went back with a tape recorder, taped them, and then listened through and went back to him again. I said, "Like that bit at the start, like that bit in the middle, and like that bit at the end," or whatever. And that's how I started to put the pieces of stuff together. And then there's a guy called Dave Clifford who ran Vox magazine, and he'd done an interview with me. And, you know, a few years previously, I was writing poetry or just writing words, and I was working with, I had two tape recorders, so I was recording myself, you know, going to the pub and going to the shops and, you know, recording the television and taps running. And he said to me, "Look, this is called Music Concrete. It's a, you know, modern form of classical music." Like, I hadn't got a clue what I was doing. So the punk rock happened then. That was a catalyst for me to sort of experiment in the studio. So I'd just come across a guitar player or a bass player or a piano player and just go in the studio and see what would happen. They'd go in, they'd play. I'd edit it and bring in another musician. So that's how the songs evolve. So it's a sort of layering process of where the work comes from.
I want to get under the hood on that, but let's take one more song. This is from 1985's Daphne Will Be Born Again. Tell me a little bit this song you've chosen.
This was recorded in STS, and it was recorded on the Fairlight computer.
Let's talk about Fairlights. Explain to our listeners what a Fairlight is.
Well, Fairlight was one of the very first samplers. You know, everybody knows about sampling now, but years and years ago, I was fascinated when I came into the studio. Like, on this track you're hearing here, it's basically a spoon knocking around the inside of a cup. So it had a second or a half second sampling rate that you could use. So it was the first time anybody could sample records. It's where all the hip hop stuff come from. Kate Bush done her album on it. So, and U2, I think they use it a lot. So
Peter Gabriel. Yeah, and yes, they all use the Sinclair. But is it true that back then they cost the same price as a 7-bedroom house?
Yeah, I think it was 120,000. I think, and that was 1983. So
wow,
I mean, you could have bought.
And now you have an app on your phone that does exactly what this thing does. Well, let's take it. We're going to talk about, because I've worked with so many musicians where I've had the stories of, you know, how you just get these hoodoo performances. But let's just have some music, and then we're going to talk about the creative process. It's Radio Nova. It's Radio Nova, and I am joined by Stano here on Locals Only this week. And just listen to that and the Sinclair and that. It's, you know, like, I could just hear Peter Gabriel. I could hear Kate Bush's Hounds of Love. And, you know, this is 1985. Hounds of Love didn't come out till September 1985. And I think you were sitting on that record for a little while. So, you know, this is what I was saying. I mean, about you've just been so on the pulse back then in terms of production, and I've worked with various musicians. Tell me a little bit about your creative process, because it's you know, you were one of the first to do this kind of corralling sound and just collecting vibe. And the one thing about your music is that it's always so emotional, even with these things that are just, you know, compiled from different... Anyway, you do the talking. How do you... Sorry.
I don't... Well, tell the truth, I don't really know how I do it in the studio. But basically, if I find a musician that I like, I'll approach him and bring him to the studio. And the way the tracks, they can work from anything, really. I could be working from a scratch noise, or, you know, it could be a sound effect. It could be a melody that I hum initially. A guitar player comes in, he starts playing it. And then initially, that guitar line would mean on most of my tracks, I'd probably have 5 or 6 guitar players, you know, 2 or 3 drummers. So the initial foundation that I lay down is probably disappears, and it moves off in different directions. Like, I have a guy called Jane, he's a Dutch guitar player. And we were messing around with these unusual tunings. And you know about production, but we had this track, and every time I played it to somebody, everybody was saying, like, well, how did you record it? What mics are you using? What compression is on it? And there's no compression on it. And it's just the key that it was in, you know? So I don't really, because I'm not musical, and I am musical, but I don't know how to play anything. So I'm not sort of hemmed in by what style.
Do you not play an instrument?
No, I don't play an instrument.
Get out of town.
Yeah. Wow. No, I can pick up, play bits and pieces, you know, but I never learned to play an instrument, because I remember years ago watching a piano player and then watching another piano player, and everybody has their own signature. And I realized that if I learned an instrument, I'd have a signature, and everything that would be laid on top of that would be, you know, coming from that area. So that's why people can't recognize one track or one album to the next album. They don't know how it happens. And it happened by accident. That's how it happened. So, I mean, another example, a few years ago, I was in the studio and had this idea. I got these drum loops, rhythms that I liked, and I brought in 5 drummers. I had Callum McKissick from My Bloody Valentine, I had Brian Downey, I had, you know, different rock drummers, jazz guys. So each drummer had come into the studio, they'd drum to the loop, but the next drummer wouldn't hear what the other drummer had done.
Right.
So I layered the tracks up. But when I was watching Pro Tools, looking at it, and you'd know about this as well, you look at Brian Downey, he's probably pushing ahead of the beat, rock drummer's on the beat, the jazz drummer's behind the beat, and then you realise, but they're all in time.
Yeah.
But what most people do, and the way people are taught today, they'd be looking at that and they'd be putting it onto the beat and moving forward and killing the soul in the
Absolutely.
Music.
Absolutely.
So even though my music is put together in different things, it has a live feel to it, it has an organic feel to it.
Yeah.
So I don't, I love mistakes, accidents happen, where a combination of notes clash, and that would trigger me to go to a different direction. Or sometimes that would lead on, I'd scrap the whole body of the song and I'd get this weird quirky loop and I'd repeat it and that would turn into a song. So I have an example is, I have a classical piece called Sleep Robin, which we recorded with the Irish Chamber Orchestra. And I was out with a friend of mine, Billy Farrell, and I just heard this little sequence in the middle of a song. And I just said to Billy, look, can you loop that for 3 minutes? And he said to me, why, you know, just loop it for it. So I took it home, played it over and over. And then I met a friend of mine, Jerry Culty, who is teaches classical music, and he teaches in Trinity College. So he rearranged it. So he said to me, listen, there's a composer called Goretzky, and, you know, this is the way I can do this music. So you're working with people in from different genres and different areas, and they opened the door to a different place to bring the stuff. Like, I was thinking strings, and he said, well, you know,
Goretzky does that really mournful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a Polish guy.
Yeah.
Polish guy, yeah.
What was it? There's something. Oh, anyway. Yeah. There's one piece of his that I love. I just can't think of it. It escapes me.
So that's really, you know, the process that I work in the studio. So I never really set out to write a song. I never really know what direction I'm going until the track is finished. And I'd probably listen to a song maybe 6 times, you know, every version of it, and nicking this down and pulling that down and moving this around. And, you know, so songs would end up with maybe, some songs end up with 20 instruments, some songs had 20 instruments and ended up with 3 instruments. So I just keep sifting through till I find, it's probably the same you know about production, you're trying to find a key, you're trying to find an opening, a door that the track, you know, becomes alive, you know?
Absolutely.
Like, you know, so.
And the journey of getting there, to, yeah. and the sacrifices, like, right, we're going to kill that,
yeah.
that 8-piece brass section that we spent X amount of money yeah. on, we're not using it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that, I mean, that can be very liberating in, you know, with art, but we will take one more tune and then I'm going to have to take a very short break. We're going to go forward a couple of years. We left off at 1985. We are now in 2010 from the album Blind Sound and Chapel Lizard. Tell me a little bit about this record. Where were you at this stage in your life?
Well, I just got back into recording and hadn't recorded in a good few years. And this was the first album that I came back and recorded with. So over the years, I became a painter and I started to sell a lot of paintings at the time. So that financed for me to build a studio. So this was the first album out of that sort of area.
Stano's back in the ring. It's Radio Nova, it's Locals Only with your host Gavin Glass, where I bring you the brave, the bold, the beautiful of what is going on out there in the Irish music scene. And we are joined by living legend Stano. This is Chapel Lizard from 2010's Blind Sound.
Thank you.
Yeah, beautiful. That is Chapel Is It from Stano. Stano, how many drummers are on that track?
I think it's 3 or 4 drummers on that track. So that was the one I was talking earlier that came from them sessions of mixing different drummers together.
So. It's wonderful. Like, it shouldn't work, but it does.
Yeah.
And we must give a shout out to the wonderful Colm Quirney on guitar and Donald Heskey, who I know. What's Donald's wife's name?
Kim.
Kim. Let's say hello. I'm always meeting Kim at the odd gig here and there. So if you're listening, guys, how are you doing? I used to do a little residency in their local a few years ago, and they would often come in.
Locals only. With Gavin Glass, bringing you the best new Irish talent every week. Radio Nova.
You're welcome back to the show. It is Gavin Glass here, and I'm joined by Stano here in Nova. And we've been just having a retrospective look at the man's brilliant career. And, you know, just listen there. You've never compromised, Stano. It was always done on your own terms. And, like, there's been, just looking at the text machine, 087 18 18 100 is the number if you want to get in touch. A lot of love coming in there for you. Adrian was saying that the tunes are out of this world. But I got a lovely text in from Sparky in Ballymun saying, Stano is a true punk artist. He supports other artists for no labour, or for no favour. He supported the brilliant artist John Duffy in Ballymun many moons ago. He drew John out and helped him push his work. Sadly, John has passed, but I want to say you are in the best company, Gavin. Sparky in Ballymun. That's lovely.
Yeah, Sparky is a good friend of mine. So, I mean, John Duffy was an incredible artist. He was a friend of mine that we collaborated together, and we had 3 or 4 exhibitions together. Met John maybe 10 years ago, and we began to work together, to paint together. But even though I helped him, he helped me a lot, because we had one particular painting. John came up with this idea, and he said, look, try and paint on a wooden canvas together. So the idea was that I'd paint on one half, John would paint on the other half, and see what would happen. And for about a year, nothing happened. It was absolutely dreadful, you know. I just thought it wouldn't work. And then John kept coming back and have a go again. And I remember 6 months into it, a painting started to work. So I went away then, and he asked me again to do it again. So I'd done the centre part of the painting, and John done the outside. I remember calling me one day, and he said, look, I have a painting here, and went up. And it just blew my mind. It was a combination between the two of us. But the interesting story about that was John was a big fan of Basquiat, the New York artist. Yeah. And we had an exhibition in City Hall. Me and John had an exhibition in City Hall. And we knew the painting that we had made was a really beautiful painting. I still have it. A lot of people wanted to buy it, but it's not for sale. It'll go somewhere eventually, maybe into a good museum or something, you know, somewhere I'm going to keep it. Because it is a really, really powerful piece of work. But I remember John coming to me and saying, there's a guy up here, and he was standing looking at John's painting. And the painting was called Nothing to be Gained. And in the painting, John had a book, and it was up these hobos that travelled across America. And when they arrive in a town, they draw a house on a post with a little circle in it. That meant you were welcome here. A house with a square in it meant you could get work, or a house with an exit meant you weren't welcome here. And the guy looking at the painting said, where did you get the title from? And he said, from this book, Nothing to be Gained. And he says, well, you know, Basquiat used that sort of book as well. And he says, yeah, it was Basquiat, was my best friend. And I gave him that book. Wow. And that's where he got it from. And like John, he was so emotional, tears in our eyes, you know. But John was just, you know, a powerful guy. You know, still his work is still out there. I collaborate with him, and, you know, he still has a great body of work. But out of that, another interesting thing happened. I have another project called In Between Silence, which is I bring in artists and painters and writers, and I get them to tell a story. I build a backing track. And so I have Roddy Doyle and then write Joe O'Connor. I have lots of different people. But a week before John died, I went up to see him, and, you know, it was a very, very difficult conversation I had with him. And I said I'd take care of his paintings, and, you know, so we had a conversation. You know, in general, it was very, very difficult. But he said to me, the biggest regret, Stano, I ever had was never in the studio with you. Now, John used to say to me, listen, I have this poem and I have, you know, this story here, and maybe I'll go in the studio. And it's just one of them things that never happened. But the previous week, I was in the studio with a guy called Brian Palm, and we were having a break, having a cup of tea between recording a song. He was recording a harmonica.
Brian Palm, the harp player.
The harp player.
I know Brian. Hello, Brian, if you're tuned in. And
with Mary
and
Stokes.
Mary Stokes, yeah. First Lady of Irish Blues.
So we were there just sitting down and having, you know, cup of tea, and Brian said, well, me and Mary were travelling across America, and we were on Route 66, and we stopped off at this Indian reservation, and before I said to him, look, don't tell me the rest of the story. And I opened up a random track, which I was working with this Dutch guitar player, and on these really unusual chords and tunings. So Brian went in, spoke this story across, and when he finished, it was like a film running in my head. It was just, you know, visually, it was just, you know, the images that he was saying, the combination, the music. So anyway, I brought it home to my wife, who usually play all my mixes to, and she works on film. And it was like a film without an image, you know, it just had that conjured up them images in your head. So then that week, John had said to me, look, you know, pity I wasn't in the studio. And off the top of my head, I said, John, look, I'm doing a spoken word album at the moment. Have you got anything for me? And he said, yes. And 2 days later, he was in the studio. And it was the most powerful, you know, not self-pity, just really, really powerful words about his wife, his kids, his friends. It was really, really emotional. And recorded the pieces, and then Dublin City Council knew I had the pieces. So anyway, the process was we put a show on for John. I built the music around his back, built the stories, and we had it in Ballymun. And I mean, Sparky would attest, you know, would know about this. It was jam-packed, you know, and the only way we could play it is images of John's painting came up and people were sitting in the dark listening to John's stories. And it was just so powerful, so emotional. And out of that came In Between Silence, which is what I'm doing now at the moment, you know. So John is still part of my work even now.
That's beautiful, man. I'm actually going to take something from that now. And I tell you, this album has been in the car since you gave it to me up in the studio a couple of weeks ago, and it's like musical volume, Stano. Okay. It's just, I found it, it just really hit a chord for where I'm at the moment. It's amazing.
Thank you.
Music, the great healer. This is Stano from the album Dream Like Silence, Dreams in a Forgotten Place. Thank you. Dreams in a Forgotten Place from Stand On for the latest recording. That's where we're at with that. Tell me a little bit about this record.
It was a continuation from the story project that I'm working on at the moment. So I learned a lot of that. I have close to 60 stories now with different artists and poets. So I, through the process, each thing I said earlier, a person would come in, they tell a story about something significant in their life. I wouldn't hear the story and they wouldn't hear the music till we press play. And I'd done it in one take. So that's the way we worked them. But within that process, I found that because it's a story, you have to bury music and dip music and warp music around. So in a way, it's a very delicate thing what I'm at with the vocal. But a couple of the tracks that I was working on, when I pulled out the vocal, I realised there was so much space and so much, and it sucks you in and makes you think about life and, about your own life and those situations. So I discovered that the space in between the tracks, and particularly that was recorded in Hellfire with Joe. And when
big shout out to Joe McGrath. Sorry, Stan, I have to give that man out. Who saved Orphan Recording, so I have to give him a big shout out.
He's the engineer on it, so, and he's a brilliant engineer. So
he sure is.
So, that was when we had Conor Lennon playing the piano. When we were setting up and we'd hit a chord, and I realised that the decay in the room was some notes were 10 seconds, some were 30 seconds. So my brief to him was, don't play the next chord, wherever it's going to be, until you hear the decay of the next note. So that's where, how them tracks are built. And they're built over underneath Ableton. I had Ableton pieces, so I create atmospheres and then I strip them back to what that is now. But really that came, all this is part of In Between Silence, and, that's John Duffy there. He's in them tracks, really.
Beautiful. I just love an artist that can just set challenges like that and to have an aerial view that isn't just, can see it with that vision. Stano, it's been absolutely amazing having you here. Where can people pick up with the new release of In Between Silence? And we also have the Content to Write in Idine Weathercraft. That's also, you have two albums out this month.
Well, In Between Silence, this one won't be released till Dreamlike Silence will be released in 2 weeks, but you can get it on my website. But Content to Write, Night on Weathercraft is released on vinyl through All City Records. So that's how it was released last Monday. So that's available through them.
Well, thank you so much, Stano.
Thank you.
I have so much admiration for you. Thank you for being here with me. That's it for this week's Locals Only podcast. Join us next week for more. And of course, catch the show Sunday evenings from 6 on Radio Nova.
The Locals Only podcast with Gavin Glass. Seriously addictive podcasting from Nova.ie and Radio Nova. Radio Nova.